to find what? Now, divine ear element. So here, the divine eye element. So the word divine is defined similarly. So in this paragraph, by divine abiding, we should understand the jhanas and not the four Brahma viharas. You find the word divine abiding about 8 or 10 lines down the paragraph. Also, it is divine because it is obtained by means of divine abiding, and because it has divine abiding as its support. And it is divine because it greatly illuminates by discerning light. And it is divine because it has a great range through seeing visible objects and that are behind walls and so on. So this explanation is given following the meaning of the root given in the grammatical treatises. That is why he said all that should be understood according to the science of grammar. That means you should understand the meaning of this with reference to what is said in grammatical treatises. Now, in Sanskrit there is a book called Dhatupatha. That means a list of roots and meanings. It was said to be composed by Panini. He was a very famous Sanskrit grammarian. the most famous of the Sanskrit grammarians. Almost everybody follows him. Even in our books, there are some references to it. So, in that list of roots, the meaning of the root here is given as, say, illuminating, given as having a great range, and so on. So, following that Dhatupatha, the list of roots, the explanation is given here. That is why all that should be understood according to the science of grammar. That means according to the grammatical books. Then the eye. It is an eye in the sense of seeing. This is the definition of the word eye. Also, it is an eye since it is like an eye in its performance of an eye's function and so on. And then it suffers as a human, they are all the same as before. Now the footnote. He cannot see them with the divine eye. Now, it is here said that he sees passing away, the beings passing away and reappearance. Now, he cannot see them with the divine eye. Actually, at the death moment or at the moment of reappearance. So, actually at the moment of death and at the moment of relinking, so at that moment he cannot see. But it is those who being on the verge of death, that means who are about to die, will die now that are intended as passing away, and those who have taken rebirth linking and have just reappeared that are intended by reappearing. That means a little before death and a little after relinking. Not exactly at the moments of death and relinking. So at the moments of death and relinking, we cannot see. And the explanation is given in the footnote from the sub-commentary. So with the knowledge of the divine eye, because of the extreme brevity and extreme subtlety of the material moment in anyone. Now, actually, it should read, because of the extreme brevity and extreme subtlety of the matter of some beings. Now, the matter in human beings may be gross, and so it's not difficult to see. But in some beings, like beings of the Brahma, they have very subtle material properties. That is why they are referred to as fine material Brahmas and so on. So their matter is extremely subtle, and also the moments of death and rebirth are so brief that they cannot be seen even with the knowledge of divine eye. Moreover, it is present materiality that is the object of the divine eye. So it is said that divine eyes, the object of the divine eye, or direct knowledge of divine eye, is the present present matter. And that is by pre-nascence condition. That means that must have arisen before the divine eye arises. That must have arisen and then existing at the moment of the arising of divine eye. So it cannot be the first appearance of matter. And there is no occurrence of exalted consciousness without adverting and preliminary work. So divine eye is the exalted consciousness, Mahagata consciousness. It cannot arise without the adverting avajjana and preliminary work, parikama. Nor is materiality that is only arising able to serve as object condition, nor that which is dissolving. So the material properties at the moment of arising and at the moment of dissolution cannot serve as the object. Therefore, it is rightly said that he cannot see with the divine eye materiality at the moments of death and reappearance. So at the moments of death and at the moments of relinking, he cannot see them. If the knowledge of the divine eye has only materiality as its object, then why is it said that he sees beings? It is said in this way since it is mainly concerned with instances of materiality in a being's continuity. There should be a full stop there. And then, or some say that. So some say that should come after all. Or some say that because materiality is a reason for apprehending beings, this is said according to conventional usage. So what he really sees is rupa or materiality. He does not see a being actually. Being means mind and matter both combined. So what the divine eye sees is the matter, or the present matter. But this matter cannot be seen without the being, because the matter is a part of a being. So it is said in the text that he sees beings. And some say that materiality is a reason for apprehending beings. That means when we see beings, we refer to the material properties or matter in them. So that is why it is said he sees beings. But actually what he sees is not beings, mind and matter together, but the material property. So he cannot see them at the moments of death and rebirth, but a little before death and a little after rebirth. And then inferior, superior, and so on, they are not difficult to understand. Now, faring according to their deeds, I would like to say their karma instead of deeds. Faring according to their karma, moving on in accordance with whatever karma may have been accumulated. Herein, the function of divine eye is described by the first expressions beginning with passing away. But the function of knowledge of faring according to karma is described by this last expression. Now, in the passage in the appearing the Pali Sodas, passing, it surpasses the human, and which is purified and superhuman, and he sees beings passing away and reappearing and so on. So those sentences refer to what? The divine eye. So that is a function of divine eye. But the function of knowledge of failing according to the karma is described by this last experience. Now, last expression means failing according to their karma. So in this passage, we have two functions of two direct knowledges, the divine eye and the seeing beings dying and reappearing. Although one is dependent upon the other, they are two different functions. First, he sees the beings with divine eye, and then he sees their karma with the faring according to their deeds. So, seeing beings faring according to their deeds or karma means he sees the karma of them. So, it is explained later. When first he sees the beings, say beings in the deva world, and then he thinks, why are they reborn in this happy state? And then he sees their good karma. So when he sees their good karma, then that is this direct knowledge of seeing beings dying and reappearing. Before that is a function of just the divine eye. So the direct knowledge of divine eye and the direct knowledge of seeing beings dying and disappearing are two different functions. The order in which that knowledge arises is this. So this is how this knowledge arises. Now he gives it attention in this way. After doing what deeds do these beings undergo this suffering? Then knowledge, that is, those karma as its object arises in him in this way. It was after doing this. Likewise, he extends light upwards and so on. So, first he sees the beings, and that is the function of divine eye. Later on, he sees the karma of them, and that is the function of the knowledge of beings dying and reappearing. And paragraph 80, there is no special preliminary work for this. And as in this case, so too in the case of knowledge of the future. So the divine eye is the basis for this knowledge of seeing beings and disappear, dying and then reappearing. So no special preliminary work is needed for it. And it is also true in the case of knowledge of future. For these have the divine eye as their basis, and their success is dependent on that of the divine eye. And then he sees beings who are ill-conducted in body and so on, so whose moral conduct is not pure. And then who revilers of noble ones, now this is important, being desirous of harm for noble ones consisting of Buddhas, it's on page 467, consisting of Buddhas, Pajika Buddhas, and disciples, and also of householders who are stream enterers. Now here, the meaning is consisting of Buddhas, Pajika Buddhas, and disciples down to the householders who are stream enterers. They revile them with the worst accusations. Worst accusations really means the worst offense with regard to a monk. See, if you say you are not a monk, then you are accusing him with the worst accusation, with the worst offense. You are not a monk means you have broken the most important rule. So if you say you are not a monk, or you have no monkhood in you, then you are accusing him with the worst offense, breaking one of the four rules, or with denial of their special qualities. And they abuse and upbraid them is what is meant. And herein it should be understood that when they say they have no asceticism, they are not ascetics, they revile them with the most, worst accusation. So here asceticism does not mean all asceticism, but it is the state of being a monk, the state of being a samana. The samana is here translated as ascetic. Actually, it should be a monk, bhikkhu, Buddhist bhikkhu. So if you say you have no state of a bhikkhu or you are not a bhikkhu, then you are accusing him with the worst accusation. That means you are saying you have broken one of the four most important rules. And when they say they have no jhana or liberation or path of fruition, etc., they revile them with denial of their special qualities. So you do not recognize them as possessing jhana, liberation, path of fruition, and so on. And whether done knowingly or unknowingly, it is in either case reviling of noble ones. It is weighty karma resembling that of immediate result. And it is an obstacle both to heaven and to heaven means to the deva world and to the path. But it is remediable. And then a story is given here. I think I have told this story many times to you. So let us go to, oh here. Now, at the first house, they got only a spoonful of hot gruel. So these two monks go out for alms. The elder's stomach was paining him with winds. When we have an ache in the stomach, we say this is the wind. What do you call that? Colic, right? Pain in the stomach.
Gas.
Is it called gas?
Yeah.
So the elder has that kind of disease, ailment, and so he was hungry maybe. He thought, this gruel is good for me, I shall drink it before it gets cold. And then people brought a wooden stool to the doorstep. That is not correct. There were no people involved in this story. Now, he, sat down on a big piece of wood which people had brought to make a door post. That is what is meant. You know, when you make, you want to make a door post, you bring a piece of log, right? So he sat on he sat down on that big piece of wood which people have brought there to make a doorpost, and then drank it. The other was disgusted and remarked, "The old man has let his hunger get the better of him and has done what is shameful for us, not what he should be ashamed to do so. What is shameful for us? I am ashamed of him," something like that. He cannot wait until he reaches a place, suitable place to drink the rice gruel. So he was so hungry that he was not ashamed to do so, something like that. So the elder wandered for alms, and on return to the monastery, he asked the young bhikkhu, "Have you any footing in this dispensation, friend?" "Yes, Venerable Sir, I am a stream enterer." "Then, friend, do not try for the higher paths. One whose kankas are destroyed," that means arahant, "so has been revived by you." So you have revived the arahant. That means I am an arahant, and you have revived me in your thoughts. So the bhikkhu asked for the elder's forgiveness and was thereby restored to his former state. So when you practice forgiveness, when you ask forgiveness from him, then you get rid of that offense. So one who reviles a noble one, that means, so any other one who reviles a noble one, so we should put any other there, paragraph 85. So any other one who reviles a noble one, and then we should strike out even if he is one himself. So that is not in the text. So any other one who reviles a noble one should go to him. If he himself is senior, he should sit down in the scolding position and get his forgiveness in this way. I have said such and such to the venerable one, may he forgive me. If he himself is junior, he should pay homage and sitting in the scolding position and holding out his hands, palms together, he should get his forgiveness in this way. I have said such and such to you, venerable sir, forgive me. If the other has gone away, he should get his forgiveness either by going to him himself or by sending someone such as a co-resident. If he can neither go nor send, he should go to the bhikkhus who live in that monastery. And sitting down in the scolding position, if they are junior, or acting in the way already described, if they are senior, they should get forgiveness by saying venerable sas and so on. So we should we should do it especially when we practice meditation, so that it may not be obstacle to our attainment through meditation. If it is a bhikkhu who wanders alone and it cannot be discovered where he is living or where he has gone, he should go to a wise bhikkhu and say, Venerable Sir, I have said such and such to the Venerable One, named so and so. When I remember it, I am remorseful. What shall I do? He is to be told, think no more about it. The elder forgives you. Send your mind at rest. Set your mind at rest. Then he should extend his hands, palms together in the direction taken by the Noble One and say, forgive me. If the Noble One has attained the final Nirvana, that is, if the Noble One has died, he should go to the place where the bed is, on which he attained the final Nirvana, and should go as far as the charnel ground to ask forgiveness. When this has been done, there is no obstruction either to heaven or to the path. He becomes as he was before. That means he got free from the offense. Wrong in their views, that means having wrong views. Acquirers of karma due to wrong views and so on. So wrong view is here said to be of very grave consequences. And here, I mean, acquirers of karma due to wrong view, those who have karma of the various kinds acquired through wrong view, and also those who incite others to bodily karma, etc., rooted in wrong view. And here, though reviling of noble ones has already been included by the mention of verbal misconduct, and though wrong view has already been included by the mention of mental misconduct, it may be understood nevertheless that the two are mentioned again in order to emphasize their great reprehensibility. Now, reviling noble ones is a verbal misconduct. And the wrong view is mental misconduct. So they are included in the misconduct. But they are mentioned again because the Buddha wanted to show that and their greatness and reprehensibility. And that means because they are very, very grave akusalas. Reviling noble one is greatly reprehensible because of its resemblance to karma with immediate result. For this is said, Sariputta, just as the bhikkhu possessing virtuous conduct, concentration and understanding could here and now attain final knowledge, so it is in this case, I say, if he does not abandon such talk and such thoughts and renounce such views, he will find himself in hell as surely as if he had been carried off and put there. So if a person has wrong view, then he cannot be reborn in a happy destiny. That is what is meant here. And there is nothing more reprehensible than wrong view, according as it is said, because I do not see any one thing so reprehensible as wrong view. Then on the breakup of the body, on giving up of the clung to aggregates, that means caused by karma. Clung to here means caused by karma. After death, in the taking up of aggregates generated next after death, that means after death, and there is rebirth. Or alternatively, on the break up of the body is on the interruption of the life faculty, that means of the cessation of life faculty. And after death is beyond the death consciousness. They mean just the same thing. And the state of loss and so on.
One question. This just before this part, is it saying that delusion has greater consequences than greed or hate, or is wrong view also greed and hate? Or is it thought of as a separate category?
Wrong view, delusion accompanies every unwholesome mental state or every unwholesome consciousness. So when we say there is wrong view, there is also delusion. Yeah, they are, what to call, they arise together.
So you're talking about greed, hate, and delusion at the same time? Or you're talking specifically about delusion in this passage, wrong view?
Wrong view here, delusion. Yeah, not greed and hatred. And then explanation of the words apaya and so on. But they just mean unhappy destiny or the places of woe and so on. Now, paragraph 93, or alternatively, the animal generation. I think we should say animal kingdom instead of animal generation. Animal kingdom is indicated by the mention of state of loss and so on. And then paragraph 94, the bright side, that means the happy destiny, heavenly, happy, yes, heavenly world and so on. They are what explanations. And here all that is a world in the sense of crumbling and disintegrating. Now the word loka, the word for world, the word loka is defined as that which is crumbling and disintegrating. That is why it is called loka. So loka means just crumbling and disintegrating. This is the word meaning. Thus with the divine eye, etc., is all a summing up phrase. The meaning here in brief is this: so with the divine eye he sees, and so on. And then how to practice to get the divine eye, or a clansman who is a beginner, and so on. Now, 96. However, while he is seeing what is visible, the turn of the preliminary work runs out. Thereupon the light disappears. Now, first he does the preliminary, he enters into jhana and then do the preliminary work. And when he does the preliminary work, the light appears. And with that light, the light of the kasina, with that light he sees what is visible. When he sees what is visible, then the preliminary work disappears. So when the preliminary work disappears, there is no light, and so he does not see anything. So there is something like a dilemma here. So the commentator said, you must do it again and again, so that the light becomes strong and not disappear. And then the simile of a man who set out on a journey by night with a grass torch, and that is given there. Okay, now, so let's go to the general. Now, in this section, the general section, the different kinds of objects of the seven direct knowledges are given. And there, on page 471, the sage has told four objects triads by means of which one can infer, and so on. So the objects of the direct knowledges is described with reference to the triads given in the first book of Abhidhamma, and they are explained in footnote 20. Now, on the sheet I handed out today, I made it easier for you to understand. So the first one is Kama Vajra. So in the footnote, it is said limited object. So limited object means Kama Vajra object. You need to understand this. So limited object means Kama Vajra object. And then exalted object means Mahagada object. And with a measureless object, means Lokutra, that means Magga, Phala, and Nibbana. And then Magga is taken again here. Magga means path. And the others are self-explanatory, past, future, present, internal, external. Non-classifiable really means concepts. Panyati. So there are triads in the first book of Abhidhamma, and the later books follow that, the order of triads, and explain aggregates and others with reference to these triads and dyads. So here there are 22 triads, and among them there are four triads that deal with objects. So from them, they are taken, and then they explain, the commentator explains which objects are taken by which direct knowledge. So the first one, knowledge of supernormal power, occurs with respect to seven kinds of object. Now, seven kinds of object. That is to say, as having a limited or exalted, that means Kama Vajra, Mahagata, a past, future, or present, and an internal or external. So seven kinds. You get them? So if you look at the sheet under number one, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Right? Yeah. And then the detailed explanation follows. And then paragraph 109. Knowledge of the divine ear element occurs with respect to four kinds of objects. That is to say, as having limited Kama Vajra, and a present, and an internal or external. Right? Present, internal, external. Yes. And then there is explanation. And then three, knowledge of penetration of minds, that is, minds of other persons. Now, how many?
Eight
kinds of objects. So limited, that means Kama Vajra, exalted Mahagata, measureless, Lokottara, path, Magga, and then past, future, present, and external. And in this paragraph, there's an interesting thing. And here, an ordinary man does not know a stream enterer's consciousness. Nor does a stream enterer know a once returner's, and so up to the arahant's consciousness. So the lower persons cannot know the consciousness of higher persons. So an ordinary means a puttojana, does not know the stream enterer's consciousness, and a stream enterer does not know the the consciousness of one Chaitanya and so on. But an arahant knows the consciousness of all others because he is the highest. And each higher one knows the consciousness of all those below him. And then, how does it have a present object now? With regard to this knowledge of present penetration of mind, the three kinds of present are mentioned, beginning with paragraph 111. So, present by moment, present by continuity, and present by extent. So, present by moment means the three phases of existence, the arising, presence, and dissolution. And that is present by moment. And present by continuity is what is included in one or two rounds of continuity is present by continuity. And when someone goes to a well-lit place after sitting in the dark, the object is not clear at first. Until it becomes clear, one or two rounds of continuity should be understood to pass meanwhile. Maybe they are explained in this way because they did not have watches in those days. So in these days we should say 5 minutes, 10 minutes or something like that. That should be the present by continuity. And present by extent means one life. What is delimited by a single becoming or existence is called present by extent, with reference to which it is said in the Bhattigarada Sutta and so on. So there are three kinds of presence: the present by moment, present by continuity, and present by extent. And then, and here, present by continuity is used in the commentaries, while present by extent is used in the suttas. And paragraph 115. Here, some say that consciousness present by moment is the object of knowledge of penetration of minds. So they say that, but Visuddhimagga does not approve of that, because the present by moment cannot be the object of this direct knowledge. Now, what reason do they give? It is that the consciousness of the possessor of supernormal power and that of the other arise in a single moment. Their simile is this, and then that is a simile. However, it is rejected in the commentaries as erroneous, because even if one went on adverting for 100 or 1,000 years, there is never co-presence of the two consciousness, that is to say, of that which he adverts and that of impulsion with which he knows. Now, in order to get the direct knowledge, then first there is adverting, and then there is preliminary. So they are two different kinds of consciousness. They cannot arise at the same time. So even adverting for 100 or 1,000 years, there is never co-presence of the two consciousness. That is to say, of that which he adverts and that of impulsion with which he knows. And because the flaw of plurality of objects, that means dissimilarity of objects, the flaw of dissimilarity of objects of both adverting and impulsion, where it is not desired. Wait a minute. Here we should say, because the flaw of dissimilarity of objects, and then we strike out what follows if presence of the same object too. So they should be striked out. And then we say, instead of two, we say of. So the flaw of dissimilarity of objects of both adverting and impulsion, then we add some words here. Where it is not desired, what should be understood is that the object is present by continuity and present by extent. In this direct knowledge, there cannot be dissimilarity of objects. So if they say that they can see the direct knowledge knows the present by moment, then there are two reasons why it is rejected. One is the two consciousness cannot arise at the same time, and the other is there will be dissimilarity of objects, because at the moment of advaiting there is one object which is one consciousness, and at the moment of impulsion and there is another consciousness. So there will be dissimilarity of objects if we take that way. So that is why it is rejected. Oh, there are many more. So, and then paragraph 120, you can check with this sheet. So, and paragraph 122, about the end of the paragraph, and there are two, only, we should put the word only there, only profitable and unprofitable aggregates are the object of knowledge of faring according to karma. And then the last paragraph, paragraph 129, is to be translated as given in on this sheet. Here it is said in the ancient commentary that this knowledge has both internal and external objects. That was said to mean that when it knows now internal and now external objects, it is said to have internal external objects as well. In the ancient commentary it is said this knowledge, the last one, this knowledge has both internal and external objects. But it does not mean that it can have internal and external at the same time. Although it appears to mean that, the wording of their opinion, because it is said both external, internal and external. But really it means that sometimes he takes in internal as object, sometimes he takes external as object. So it can be said that it takes internal and external objects, but not at the same time. Okay, that is the end of this chapter. so much to talk about. But at least we get the general idea of what's there in the book.
Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. If you didn't ask me to teach Visuddhimagga, I would not be teaching many years. And I'm very glad that at least all of you have acquaintance with what's in the Visuddhimagga. And it's helpful in the study of Abhidhamma too. The next section will deal with all Abhidhamma. So if you are teaching Abhidhamma to somebody, you can get much information from part of purification. Because the other commentaries are not available to people in the West. They are mostly in Pali, not yet translated. But this book is more easily available than other books. And so the only thing is where to find what? Where to find the information? It is good to make notes, say something like an index. You write on index cards and then keep them. Because the index is not much helpful. It's fairly comprehensive, but not so helpful. So when you go through the book, you know which information will be good to remember. Then you write down on a card and then keep the card with you, so that when you want it, you can get it easily. Okay, then we do not meet for 2 weeks.
The third week we meet.
The 21st. Oh, yeah. 100th chapter.